DW Africa Link.
Maize is more than just food in Malawi. It's survival. But survival is slipping away. Markets are empty, prices are soaring, and hunger is tightening its grip on millions. Families wake up to the harsh reality that the staple they depend on is now out of reach. Meanwhile, a crippling forex shortage has left the government and businesses powerless to import what's missing. How did a country so dependent on maize find itself in this crisis? And with no end in sight, what happens next? This is a crisis of immense significance. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Maize prices in Southern Africa remain high, with several countries hitting record levels in early 2025 due to tight supplies following the El Nino-induced drought of 2024. Just to remind you that maize is the staple food in most parts of Southern African countries. This surge of maize prices has been driven by reduced harvests and a weak currency, which has raised import costs. This means that low-income families can hardly put food on the table. In today's podcast, I have invited the acting president of the Economics Association of Malawi, Betha Bangara Chikadza, to discuss on how Malawi can embrace best agricultural practices. Also joining us is our correspondent in Lilongwe, Miriam Kaliza. As someone who comes from Zimbabwe, when I hear that shortage of maize, that's our staple food, and the way I love my sads, I can imagine what Malawians are also going through. But I'll start with you, Betha Bangala, as our economic analyst. Just by you unpacking for our listeners the real situation on ground, especially in regards to skyrocketing prices of food, including the famous staple food, maize.
You know, we are coming from a situation where, as a country, we suffered from a couple of catastrophes. We had last year, we had cyclones, and the heavy rains destroyed most of the crops in the fields. And by the time people were harvesting, the maize was actually in short supply. And then going into another season where, as a country, we also faced a dry season. So we had El Nino, and this also affected the country much more than the way it was last year. So when we looked at the crop harvest of the 2023-2024 season, it was actually much lower than what we expected. And even though we thought initially we might maybe experience a 16%, decline in food, I think it ended up to be more than that. So because of those discrepancies, even in our preparations, we were not all that well. And by the time we started experiencing the lean season, because normally in Malawi, we always face food shortages around December, January, February, March. That's when the situation starts, getting better, because people have now started getting maybe raw green maize from the field. And by the time we are going to April, then the situation is getting better. But by last year, during the lean season, the situation was actually much worse. And then even when we were now reaching the time of harvest, the maize was not all that available to the lay person, even those people who are smallholder farmers. So even though I'm saying the situation is dire, it is dire because one thing as an economist that I have seen is it's not about maize unavailability, but it's about probably issue of distribution. Because in Malawi, you might find that in the northern part, people are not suffering as the way people in the southern part are suffering. Because people in the northern part, even the prices, you might see that the northern part has actually mild prices. If you go on the central region, the prices are rising, but not as close to those as in the southern part. So the southern part, the maize prices are much, actually much very high. So this has always been the case, and the northern region normally has maize and also some parts of the central. And so what is happening is the traders take advantage of this and they go and buy the maize. And yes, they utilize that. They hoard the maize and mm-hmm. they wait for the prices to keep on skyrocketing. And because of that problem that we had, El Nino, and many people did not actually produce as they were expected. So come this year, the problem has now increased because this is the lean season. We are in February, and as always, prices of maize always go up. Only that this time they have gone up extremely more than what we expected.
But when you are talking like this, Bertha, I assume, obviously every government will have economists also working in there. And if you say this has been ongoing, and I'm just wondering, what is government doing about it? Because if you say some people are hoarding the maize, this is like black market type of business, like hoarding the maize, holding on to it, and to ensure that when they now roll it out into the public, the prices are like 3 times, 4 times higher. Yes. What is the government doing about this?
Actually, I think what us as analysts always say and advise the government, and most of the times what the government does, because you might see that most of the times the decisions that the government does, they are only politically correct, but they are not most of the times at the benefit of a person who is really struggling. I'm saying this because if you look at the problem of food insufficiency in the country, we've always been singing this problem, this song for a long time. And we've always complained about why the agriculture sector always have probably the highest or the second highest allocation of the budget. But you might see that half of that budget goes to agriculture input program, which is maybe distributing, subsidized fertilizer, cheap fertilizer and seeds to people. And which people are we talking about? The smallholder people. And these are the people who, even if you give them fertilizer, you give them the seeds, it's the same people that the government will come back and subsidize maize, it will come back with relief maize to give them. So we've always said, this has not been working. What if the government was actually supporting the mega farmers, give them, climate smart tools that they can actually grow maize even during the time that we are facing a drought? Because if someone is irrigating, it doesn't matter whether you are having a drought or not a drought. And if someone is irrigating, they can actually grow maize 3 or 4 times a year. And by that time, the country can actually have food sufficient. But we've always said, as economists, we always glorify the consumer and we tend to forget the producer. So the producer is not motivated enough. So we've always said, if maybe half of the resources that go to agriculture were channeled to mega farming, and then we subsidize, products that the mega farmers can use in terms of fertilizers, in terms of tools, then we give them the mandate and also timelines. Say in 4 months or 5 months, we want you to produce this tonnage. We will be monitoring you. And actually, we have to verify that they have the land. And this is also something that actually has been missing, because we've seen the government talking about mega farming, but when we go on the ground, someone can just come and show them the land. And yet, maybe that is not the land that they own. So the mega farming thing is actually also being flouted about, because there are some shortcuts that is happening. But otherwise, it's a good program, because we've always said, let us move away from AIP. And then we actually start growing maize in large scale. Then let us, maybe the government, they can buy from these traders, put the maize. We have the Agricultural Development and Marketing Corporations. We have ADMAC markets in almost every district in the country. And they even go into the rural. They have actually centers in there. We were saying ADMAC now can rise up to the standard, because we used to have these ones operating. So they should go early, buy the maize, put them in their grain silos. The time like this, it should be now ADMAC selling. So at this time, I don't think if we were to follow that model, the traders will not actually be taking advantage of the people who do not have enough money. And I don't think the prices of maize would have been rising like the way they are rising now.
Right, right. Now, speaking of food prices rising, Miriam Kaliza, you are our reporter, our eyes and ears on the ground. Just to find out from you how ordinary Malawians are coping with this rising food prices, and also there is a complaint of forex shortages. Tell us what's happening.
Thank you very much. Indeed, Malawians are currently facing significant challenges due to escalating food prices and also a severe shortage of foreign exchange. These things are married somehow. There might be a lot of other reasons why maybe food prices are going up, but also the foreign exchange shortage is also included in these things. And the issues have led to cost of living crisis affecting both households and businesses across the country. So on the ground, Malawians are crying. It's making it difficult for families to afford basic necessities. And maybe coping mechanisms, other families, you wouldn't know maybe if you are a bit privileged, other families are having one meal a day just to cope up with the pressure and everything else that's happening.
Right, right. And I'm just wondering, as you are obviously reporting on these issues, what are some of the most striking stories you are coming across or you've come across, Miriam, especially with this dire situation? I understand you, something like maize meal. In Malawi, I don't know if you call it sadza or you call it...
Yes.
It's something that everybody and anybody in Southern Africa at least can afford. At least if you have that, you can still have your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you can make porridge, you can make nsima in the afternoon, in the evening. But now when the maize is also so expensive, like even what our economic analyst Peter was saying here, then what are people saying really?
It's really bad, and it also reflects badly on the current administration. The problem, I would say, Malawians, a lot of Malawians, maybe it's an African thing, they think in maize. So we might have other foods available, maybe cassava or sweet potatoes. But as long as there's no maize, then there's no food.
They're like me. Look, we grew up eating. This is our food. I can eat sadza morning, afternoon, evening. Don't blame us. That's not the problem.
So we are thinking about maize only and not other available, maybe local foods that can be easily found. So the sentiments of local Malawians on the social media, on the local platforms, or local radios or social media, it's not nice. It's not reflecting very good in a good way for the current administration. And you would find that if the ADMAG, like Bertha said, is selling ADMAG, they are also limiting or controlling how people can get. Maybe a family of seven, they are allowed only to get 25 kilograms of maize. It's nothing. It means 2-3 days they need to go back and, or maybe a 5 liters plastic pail of maize. It's not enough. So people would have wanted, if government had maize and was selling to people in an affordable way and also in quantities that they might want. But also the problem is if they will be selling in quantities people might want, now vendors will also come in, buy the very same produce and sell elsewhere at an exorbitant price. So it's
But there's something that Miriam, you mentioned that there are other alternatives now for Malawians listening to us, or not just Malawians, any other Southern African country person listening to us right now and thinking, oh, actually, yeah, maybe it should not only be maize or nsima or sadza or whatever. What alternative food sources are available to households that cannot afford this maize? And also you mentioned ADMAG, that they are giving maybe 25 kilo per family of seven. What other alternatives does ADMAG have? What other food items do they also make available for people in Malawi?
I'll start with ADMAG. For ADMAG, I don't think they really have a lot of alternatives because they mainly buy and sell maize and legumes. But for every other Malawian or Southern African person that are listening to us, we have rice.
Now, Miriam, I know we are talking about other food items that people could try, but there was always the issue of economic crisis in Malawi. Different sectors such as agriculture, small businesses and healthcare, everybody's complaining. Tell us about that.
Indeed, a lot of other sectors have been affected. You talk of agriculture. It's a lean season, like Bertha said. Now people are in the fields now, you know, trying to produce, but they also need to have food at home. And like I said, it's not reflecting very good on the current administration. People are saying a lot of things because we are going to elections come September, and people might want maybe to change or shake things a bit so that they maybe bring a government that's listening, or the government that's going to give them food when they want food. The health sector also is affected, I would say. People would want to prioritize food and not maybe education and not maybe health. So maybe the money that would have been going to the health sector or to the education is now being invested into food. Food means everything. A person to go vote, they need to go there while they have eaten. You wouldn't expect somebody who is hungry to go vote or to go attend a political rally, because, I mean, they wouldn't want that. Then the government is not serving them right. But also talking about that, a lot of Malawians, a lot of voters, they seem to have less alternatives when it comes to who then to put on the hot seat. So it's really chaotic currently. Maybe it's going to look good as the year pans out, but currently a lot of other sectors are affected because of the food skyrocketed food prices and the shortage of forex.
Right. Betha, would you want to add something on that? You are the analyst here, you are the economist. So just to look at other sectors and just an overall view of what should be done now in Malawi, because I know earlier you mentioned what at least the government should do. But when we assess issues maybe to do with subsidies, social programs or trade policies, do you feel like these are helping or worsening the situation?
As an economist, you know, I see these things in both ways. I'll talk about the social part where, yes, we believe it is the duty of the government to make sure that the people are being assisted and helped on the other part by being provided with those social services. But I think, as Miriam has said, yes, the foreign exchange issue has affected the country a lot because people are just now adjusting prices anyhow. And yes, the government is coming in. However, if I was to look at this thing in terms of probably the budget, I would say it's high time we started looking at the productive sector. Because if you look at the center of all these problems, it's because we are not doing production right. In terms of food production, we are always insufficient. We are not producing enough. Mm-hmm. In terms of, for example, producing for export, we are indeed an agricultural economy. So the issues about serious mining, we are just starting. But even if we were to do that agriculture right, by now as a country, we were supposed to have moved, you know, from complaining about forex. We know we have a share in the market of tobacco. We also have markets, for example, soybeans. We have markets for groundnuts. We have even markets out there, maybe for flowers, but we are not actually, you know, taking our share of the market out there. There are a lot of things that I can list out. And as a country, by now, we're supposed to say, okay, even the foreign exchange program is actually a very problem that occurs every year. I'm saying this because the whole of my PhD thesis was on foreign exchange constraints. And that's about, 2015, 2014 when I graduated. So it's a problem that has always been there, that we have always suffered, but we seem to be not finding the right solutions to this. So I look at what other countries are doing. For example, Kenya just exported, you know, we're talking of tons and tons of Valentine's flowers. What did they get? They got foreign exchange. What did we do on Valentine? We did nothing. So, you know, these are some of the things that sometimes I look at my country and I'm like, it seems like we are all people with no good heads, but we have PhDs in here. We have even agriculture extension workers in here.
What is the problem?
The problem is now because the government is run by politicians. That's the problem. Because even if you allocate the necessary money to agriculture, they do not go to the right things that were supposed to be funded in the first place. By now, we're supposed to be out of the woods in terms of food insecurity. By now, we're supposed to look at the alternatives to tobacco. Yes, tobacco is falling. We are not exporting as we're supposed to export then. But what have we done? We can even get a market, you know, to supply flour in Sudan, and we fail to supply that flour. That's Malawi for you. So these are some of the things I think that we can sit down and critically analyze as a country, that in a year, what do we want to achieve? We have beautiful lake, but the roads to that lake are terrible. So as an investor, and we're touting tourism, we've always talked about this even with the government. If someone comes from outside and they come through Kia, they want to go to the lake. They have to face all the potholes that are there in the middle. By the time they arrive at the lake, they are tired. They cannot even enjoy. If we can have a direct road to our tourist attraction areas, trust me, we would have been earning something by now. So there is a lot in terms of the production that we're supposed to do, because yes, we are doing the social part. We are building roads, we are building health centers, we are building houses, maybe for police officers and the extension workers and whoever. But these are the social part, the social development that we're doing as a country. So we need now to start talking about the cake that we need to grow before we start sharing. So what can we grow as a country? Where do we have, I would say now in my economics, a comparative advantage? Which one can we produce cheaply and also fast and actually quick wins that can generate the much needed forex? Because we can just be complaining, but we look at ourselves, we're saying, what is it that we are doing as a country? So, I believe that, you know, we have all the policies, we have all the decisions, we have everything that people have provided. It's just implementation that is the problem with the country.
Miriam, you are also reporting a lot on the promises. We are talking about the economic solutions here. Are there any signs of economic relief coming soon in the country, or is the situation worsening?
Well, me as a person, I would say, no, it is what it is, politics, rhetoric. Talk is cheap. People can talk whatever they want, but the implementation, as Betha is saying, I wouldn't want to talk about what this administration promised and it's not happening. So it is what it is.
Betha, as we wrap up our discussion, what lessons can Malawi also learn from the region? I know you mentioned food shortages. You have neighboring South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Malawi. What lessons can the country learn from the neighbors?
I think what we can learn from the region is the linkages between the private sector and the government. These are critical for any country's development. Whenever the government maybe doesn't have the enough resources for production, the private sector needs to step up, you know, to provide that liquidity that, for example, industrialization can take place, manufacturing can take place. They should actually go in and invest. I was talking about tourism. I haven't seen much that the private sector is doing because we need to create jobs. We need money to circulate, but also we need to steer development as a country together. And so I believe that we've talked enough, but probably it's high time that the government do the necessary policies, woo the private sector, do those private-public partnerships, and I think the development that the country needs. Thank you so much.
Betha Bangala, an economic analyst in Malawi, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast, as well as our own correspondent in Lilongwe, Miriam Kaliza.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
Well, it's hard to find a country in sub-Saharan Africa that can boast of enough food reservoirs. And that's why it is important that we mention other countries grappling with food insecurity, like South Sudan. Rising food prices in South Sudan risk pushing thousands of families into severe food insecurity. This comes on top of a growing humanitarian crisis on the border as families continue to flee conflict and the world's largest hunger crisis in Sudan. But even without the impact of the conflict, South Sudan is already facing horrific hunger levels driven by flooding, drought, and irregular rainfall. Over half of the country is experiencing food poverty, and over 1.5 million children are malnourished. can only hope that the situation gets better. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of all our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Please remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.